For centuries, tracking animals was as impractical as it was imprecise. Look, a feather, some droppings, paw prints. But now, thanks to satellites, drones, GPS collars, DNA sequencing, we know where the animals go, which is the title of a new book by James Cheshire and Oliver Uberti. James, a senior lecturer at the University College London, where he's also a cartographer. Welcome.
Hello.
And Oliver is a former design editor for National Geographic. Oliver Uberti, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having us.
And the fact that you're cartographers and design editors is why this book is so beautiful. James, start with you. Why?
We're at a time, really, where there's an animal tracking revolution that's just started. And our skills really are taking these big, complicated data sets that the tags and sensors are sending back and producing these beautiful maps and graphics from them.
Well, and you quote a turtle researcher, Oliver, you both do, who said, in order to protect animals, you need to protect where they go.
Tracking allows us to see what we can't observe for ourselves. It's the nocturnal wanderings of a jaguar or the seasonal migrations of a bird. And if you only protect, say, the breeding grounds of a golden-winged warbler in Tennessee, but you aren't putting in place protections or working with other countries to put in protections in their wintering grounds in the tropics, that's only half the story.
Right.
And we tried to show you the full story.
It's very clever because you have kind of put on some of these animals human characteristics, like elephants who text and, you know, jaguars who take selfies. They don't really. They're just involved. They're interacting with this technology. But let's address the pheasants who walk the Himalayas. As you say, search for tragopan mating dance on YouTube, and you will see why they are named after Pan, the promiscuous Greek god of the wild. Tell me a little bit about these pheasants.
Their migrations and their mating dance are two separate stories.
I know, but the mating dance is so much fun.
The mating dance, I really encourage your listeners to check it out. And it turns out their migration behaviors are equally surprising. There's a temptation to think, when we think about climate change, that as temperatures rise, that animals, especially that live in alpine environments, will kind of get painted into a corner. And the researchers who tagged these tragopans were surprised to find that within their small sample size, they had tragopans that were going down to lower elevations in the winter, but they also had a few that went uphill in the winter. And when they're living in the Himalayas, that's a feat in itself.
I mean, I think the moral of that story is that no two animals are the same, really, and we're interested in how individuals behave. And it's optimistic in many ways because it shows that animals might be more resilient to some of the changes that in climate that we can expect. But also, it does really underscore that we're dealing with quite complex systems in a way, and we need to be really careful and really value the way that we manage them and interact with them.
Well, and you said something about a surprise, Oliver. Researchers have been shocked at the wide range of some of the animals. For instance, jaguars.
First of all, jaguars are hard to find. They are living in the rainforest. They evolved to be elusive. They are nocturnal. So one of the methods that researchers have implemented to try and see the jaguars is to use camera traps. And they would set up camera trap grids 60 square kilometers around the size of Manhattan. This researcher, Matthias Tobler at San Diego Zoo Global, started to realize as their ranges were 10 times the size of Manhattan. Mm. It's kind of like that line from Jaws, we need a bigger grid, right? Mm-hmm. So he went back out and set up a camera trap grid 650 square kilometers. And that's what we show in the book. All the sightings, not only of jaguars, but all the other animals in the rainforest that jaguars interact with.
Yeah. Terns also a much wider range than people thought, James?
Yeah, that was another real surprise that researchers have known and ornithologists have known that Arctic terns, who are the, you know, quite small birds, do these tremendous migrations from essentially the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere. But what they didn't anticipate was the kind of detours they took en route. So these particular groups of terns came from the Netherlands. They flew to essentially the coast into the Southern Ocean, and then they went along as far as Australia and New Zealand before looping back and flying back along Antarctica and back up to the Netherlands. And if you're damaging the ecosystems at any part of that journey, you would be damaging the prospects of the migrating bird.
And you're talking about a journey here that in total is 70, 90,000 kilometers, depending on where the bird originated from.
And by the way, how do we know how far terns fly?
They were given these tiny sensors that were strapped to their legs, and there are these really clever systems that look at the number of hours of daylight. Because the turns are small and the journeys are so great and so long, you need a tiny tag that lasts a long time, and that's exactly what these ones do.
Another thing that has made news quite a bit is the journey of the mountain lion, and one in particular. P-22 is one of them, and M-86?
P-22 we hear a lot about. He's definitely in Hollywood what you'd call an A-lister. Mm. He's from a population originally from the Santa Monica Mountains, marooned on a genetic island, and they need to be able to get out and diversify their gene pool. But the freeways of Southern California make that nearly impossible. And plans are in the works to develop a vegetated bridge across the 101 to give the Santa Monica Mountain lions a chance. But few people are talking about another population from the Santa Ana Mountains on the way to San Diego. They really need a vegetated land bridge somewhere along Interstate 15, which is about 8 to 10 lanes. And if they can get across that, they have a nearly unbroken chain of wilderness all the way down towards Mexico. It's really their only hope. And we've underestimated the significance of freeways as a barrier. I had the pleasure of going to Kenya and working with Ian Douglas Hamilton and Frank Pope of Save the Elephants. I joined them on an elephant collaring operation in Tsavo National Park. Now, the situation in Tsavo is they've recently built a high-speed railway that goes from the capital, Nairobi, to the port of Mombasa on the coast. And that railway bisects Tsavo National Park, and it's bisecting elephant migration corridors. But they were able to lobby the construction company to build underpasses at strategic points along the railway to allow the elephants to move back and forth and continue their migrations. And now they're doing everything. They've got a wildlife tracking app, and they partner with Google Earth, and they're doing a lot of different things to allow them to have real-time updates of where the elephants are while they're doing their aerial survey.
You actually went to this elephant culling and saw this elephant because this elephant had been shot and was down.
The accelerometers in these collars allow, say, the elephants to monitor the rate of movement of an animal. So if an animal is shot or injured, it will start moving more slowly and it will drop below a threshold. And when that threshold is broken, an automatic text message is sent out. So I was in the airplane with Frank Poe from Save the Elephants. We're flying back from the collaring operation in Tsavo National Park, and his phone lights up with a text message that says, "Culling's been moving unusually slowly." And it turned out she'd been shot four times by herders who were competing for resources.
Well, here is a moment where you were right by this incredible beast. She did die. And, you know, I'm reading along thinking, wow, there's this great technology, so of course they're going to save the elephant. And it doesn't happen. But what still is the benefit there of the technology?
I think that one of the biggest benefits and actually one of the most transformational things about, personally for me doing this book, and I think for the readers, is you do start to look at animals as individuals and you can relate to them. They have day-to-day challenges that they have to overcome. And I think being able to watch on a map the journey of an animal that's suffering, or even just the journey of an animal that is thriving, it really does bring the data to life, and it helps educate people, I think, about what it is we can do to live more harmoniously with them.
Well, because, yeah, as you see, it's laid out here. This is one of your graphs. Morning commute. You know, 46 baboons begin their daily forage with a river dash, and we see it. Couple last things. Sea turtles and pythons have internal compasses that help them navigate.
It's not just having a compass, it's having a timetable. One of the favorite stories for me is the story of a turtle named Fisher, who was rescued as a baby turtle, spent his life in an aquarium, was released, and made straight lines straight to the part of the ocean it needed to be in with all the other turtles of a similar age. It was just some innate feeling that he needed to be in this part of the ocean at this particular part of his life.
It's one of the great mysteries of animal migration. And, you know, the scientists, we're learning new things all the time. It's tempting to think in 2017 we know everything about the natural world. But if there's one thing we try and make clear about this book, is that the scientists were being surprised all the time.
Yeah. And someday, maybe we just tap into what they're already doing. The book is Where the Animals Go, Tracking Wildlife with Technology in 50 Maps and Graphics. And they are beautiful because James Cheshire is a cartographer, Oliver Uberti, a former design editor at National Geographic. They've put this book together. We'll have pictures at hereandnow.org. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.